And on Radio Australia, it's time for our technology segment with Maurice Michalowski, who is a business futurist. You can find him at businessfuturist.com. Maurice, welcome to our studios.
Great to be here.
Great to have you here as well, because we love talking technology and especially how it's going to change our lives. Especially one of the things that has changed our lives over the past, decade or so, or two decades really now, mobile phones, which we know is useful for many things apart from making phone calls, especially if you have a smartphone. But you've been tracking applications in developing nations, and it's really taken off there.
It's a very interesting phenomenon. Most of us are quite used to using our mobile phones for, as you said, making phone calls and the odd bit of diary and whatever else we need. But in developing countries, they're using it for much, much more. And what they're using is, in fact, not what we would call the smartphone, which are things we've just talked about that do more than dial. They're using the traditional, what might be called, dumb phone. In other words, the thing that just SMSs and makes phone calls. They're using it for banking. They're using it for finance, they're using it for health, they're using it for all kinds of things. And what's happened is this understanding that in many developing countries, it's never going to be possible to give total access to everybody to the internet by laying cables. It's just an impossibility, even with the best of intent. So what they've done over the last decade is say, well, if that's not going to be possible, we still want to give everybody the same opportunity to have internet, let's skip over cable and let's go straight to using a mobile device. So much of what's being developed in these third world or developing countries or emerging nations, whatever we call them, is notions of how we can use that thing to achieve so much more. And this week Vodafone announced one of its major pushes into India to use a mobile phone as a banking piece. So what people are able to do through their dumb phone, just a normal ordinary phone, is to use that almost like an ATM, almost like NFC. So NFC we've talked about is near field communication, which is the next big thing we're going to see across most of the world, which is where we can take our mobile phone, it becomes our wallet, and we can just pay. So it's really like a mobile credit card. That's what we're expecting in about a year or two to have here. But what Vodafone and others are doing is saying, well, on the dumb phone, we can do something fairly similar. Different technology, same end result. We can let people use their ordinary phone, go in and make their usual purchases, so their small purchases for their fruit and vegetables and breads and whatever else they want, but through their mobile device, make an automatic payment for it.
This does not require, what the developed world might be used to when trying to perform some of these functions, and that is click on an app, it's all touchscreen with colours and everything. It's none of that.
It's absolutely none of that. Now, what happens is the phone simply has a very simple download brought down to it. The download opens up. It becomes a mobile banking. You key in all of your usual security things, so your code, password, and whatever. It type in the person that you're going to pay, so that would be the shop or wherever you're in, and how much you want to pay, and the transaction's automatically sent from your dumb mobile phone, so to speak, through to the person. Now, what you can also do, which is really interesting, is that you can send money to other people. So often people are working a long way away from their families and their villages, and often, especially in China, it can be literally 3 days travel for them to get back home. But what they're able to do is to send their wages, to send money back home instantly using mobile phones.
How secure is this?
Well, it's as secure as anything we're using is the answer. This is done through banks, so it's not done through some third party. It's being done through the very secure banks as we know them. And like anything with technology, you know, what would it have? An 80, 90% surety? In other words, most things will go wrong. And like anything, as I always say, there'd be some little person out there who would be able to hack into it. But ostensibly, it's a fairly safe tool. It's been used for a number of years, even though it's new technology rolling out in India. This has been prototyped for about 3 years now. And I've heard of evidence of these over the last 4 or 5 years. So it seems to have a lot more goodness than evilness attached to it. And it is a wonderful way, as I said, for most people to get to banks, because if we take India, for instance, with a population of over 1 billion people, there are only 89,000 banks, and most of them are, of course, in cities. They're not in most of the places where most of the population is. And the other interesting figure is, going back to our internet access, is that India has 100 million people connected by cable on the internet, which sounds like an enormous amount. It's only 10%. It's only 10% of the population.
Well, that's right. Taking that into account, not really.
So anywhere else on the world, it would seem like a monumental achievement. Right. In India, it's literally the proverbial drop in the bucket.
Yes, that's right. If there is a downside, though, what would it be? Would security be the big one?
For me, honestly, not. I don't think it is, because this truly is as secure as anything can be, given the internet and given all of that. So the technology
is. What if you accidentally dropped your phone down the toilet bowl? Which happens?
Well, I think to me it's the same as losing your wallet, the same as losing your credit cards. The reality is they're lost or they're stolen. With most of these, and I know it to be the case with this one, with most of these, if you can make contact with the bank, who is the intermediary, they will automatically stop payments, and most of the banks will actually incur the debt from that point forward. So if you notify them, tell them it's been stolen, they will stop it, and anything that's gone through that you can prove is not yours, they will often wear the cost for that. So it's in the bank's interest to make sure these things are very secure, because as we said, if you take India's example, 89,000 branches, they're never, ever, ever going to be able to get even close to the population, and they want to do that.
Just keep your passwords very, very secure.
Yes, absolutely.
That would be a really good piece of advice.
Absolutely.
But the other area where technology and mobile phones is making a huge impact is the health industry.
Yeah.
Tell us about this thing called mHealth.
mHealth. That's a fancy word for mobile health. So you just chop off the obile and get left with the M. And what it's doing is exactly the same thing on the same basis that we've spoken about. In many of the developing nations, again, it's difficult to get good medical care into all the nooks and crannies, all the villages, all those small places. But, of course, we want to do that. And one of the ways we can achieve that is through mobile phones. Strangely enough, much of the world, in fact, carries a mobile phone. 64% of all mobile phones are found in what are traditionally called the developing world. 64%
really?
Of all mobile phones, yeah. And 80% of that 64%, if you can follow the math through, is in fact in rural areas.
That's quite amazing to think about, because you think of people in developed countries and just about everybody's got a mobile phone. If you don't have one, it's like, what's wrong with you?
Yeah.
But that really turns on its head for a lot of people who think, okay, rural areas usually means no communication whatsoever. I mean, you do the thing the traditional way, which is walk to the village house on the other side of your village or something like that in order to pass on a message. So you're saying that's not the case at all?
No, not at all. NISTATs are really very solid. I mean, they're put together by telecommunication. It's a world body. And as I said, their stats are usually seen as being quite spot on. And it's an amazing thing to think about that. So what we're talking about is, of course, not everybody has a mobile phone, and we're not talking about the way that we would use it. These things become more of a necessity. And in remote villages, you'll often find that one or two people will have them, and they are a shared tool. So they obviously belong to that person, but other people would come and use them as appropriate. So what you're finding is those...
It's like a mobile home phone, really.
Well, pretty much. And you find that those people that might have the one or two mobile phones would then use it for so much more. It's used for education, which isn't what we're talking about now, but it's actually used for education as well. So homeschooling is run through mobile phones as well.
How does that happen?
It happens simply through talk. So what you'll have is you'll have a teacher in one area, and he or she will then have a classroom, and those students will be at the other end of a telephone. It's not dissimilar for what we did in Australia, and we still do when we teach children who are on remote farms.
Mm.
I mean, that was School of the Airwaves, and it really worked on a radio, so it's not much different. I mean, it's different technology, but it's the same premise of educating students who can't get to a physical space together and share. So education on mobile phones is quite common now. As we get into...
You'd have a good speaker on that mobile phone.
You'd want to, wouldn't you? And you certainly want to have a good plan on it, because you'd be using it for hours.
A lot of this muffled voice thing where you can't even try to make out what they're trying to say. That happens quite often.
Yeah. So we're using it for that, and as we get into tablets, because we've already talked in previous episodes about India having a $30 tablet, a computer tablet we're talking about, not like the iPad, but that kind of instrument, and the $30 we're told will come down to $10 because there's a huge order in for them.
Amazing.
Yeah, I mean, totally amazing, but again,
what can they do with that tablet?
That tablet is quite incredible. That actually has the majority of what you need for day-to-day usage, let alone schools. So it's got all the things that we do, so the reading, the writing, the arithmetic, all of those programs that we might use on ours. It has the ability with webcam attached to it. It has the phone, so you've got a SIM card in it that allows you to do these things, which means you can come out of voice and go into video as well to do that. So the tablets are really quite smart. For even the $30, it's the same thing. It's just, again, a bulk purchase is going to bring the price down in the next 12 months. For that $30 one, you are getting extremely good value. I mean, take it into a normal classroom in a normal, you know, well, shouldn't say normal, but an average in an average country, and the students really would be able to get perfect use out of it.
So don't drive space as well?
Yeah. So don't let the price fool you. It really is just a matter of it's built because there are so many. So they've literally ordered millions and millions of them, and they're using components that are generic.
Now, there's anyone get access to them?
Not at that price, but certainly.
So you can't go on eBay and look it up.
Well, the answer is most probably you could. I've never tried. I'm sure somebody would be selling it out the back of somewhere. But no, these aren't something you would buy in a normal retail store. They have been purpose built for the students. In this case of India, they've been built with generic parts, which are totally perfect because most PCs that aren't branded, in fact, carry generic parts in them. So these things work really, really well. And what's beautiful behind it is that we can use technology like mobile to get information, to get health services, to get education services, to get banking services into countries and places that otherwise would never have access to it.
We sort of started talking about its impact in the health industry, and that's actually quite wide-ranging.
So, yeah, absolutely. So if we go back to India, for instance, we're finding that one of the things that's being done is like an outreach program for medicine. So people that might not be able to get to a doctor as soon as they need actually now have a facility. And in this facility, what they do is they train one or two people and give them basic first aid. And these people obviously live in the remote villages. So if you have a doctor and can't go, you'll go to one of these basic first aiders. He or she is able to do basic diagnosis, and then they're able to use a mobile phone to be able to connect up to a doctor or to a hospital that will look after a larger area. And through that mobile phone, they're able to get advice, but they're also able to do some basic testing and send some basic tests back to the hospital and also get advice through it as well. So these devices can do all of that. They become the conduit. And then, of course, from there, that person, if it's felt, needs to, can be escalated, and they can be taken physically to those hospitals. But what does happen more often than not is a prescription. So the doctor will come back and say, with these symptoms and with this is what we believe you need to do. This is the treatment you should give the person, monitor them, and let me know on whatever scale that is of how they're improving or not.
If it's slightly more serious, though?
Again, it would be escalated, and then we come out of the mHealth, and we really come back into a physical hospital. But the beauty of this is that they are all joined by it. And even this nexus of hospitals then actually spills itself out further, because this same network they've established, which is the local first responder, then to hospital, these hospitals are actually then hooked up again through this mobile network to specialists around the globe, around India and around the globe. So they're able then to get assistance where they don't have the specialty care.
It does address quite a number of problems, including a shortage of doctors and nurses, doesn't it?
Yes.
Which seems to be a global problem.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, when you look at doctors, the lack of doctors, it's a really interesting phenomenon. In Australia, we have 2.5 doctors for every 1,000 people on average. In America, they have 2.7 doctors. I don't know what they do with the other 0.3, don't ask me. But 2.7 doctors for every 1,000 people. When you get to India, you have 0.6 of a doctor per 1,000 people. In Nigeria, it's 0.28 doctors. In Bangladesh, it's 0.26 doctors. In Uganda, it's 0.08 doctors per 1,000 people. So you're absolutely right that physically, we're not going to get enough trained medical people into these areas, even with the best of intent. It's just not going to happen in the short term. So the next big thing is to take then, as we said, this phenomenon of many places have connection to mobile. Let's see what we can do with that as an interim. Let's see what good work we can do through that as we build towards, of course, what we all want to have, which is physical people in physical places.
So there are good things happening in this world. Maurice Pasolowski, business futurist. You can find him at businessfuturist.com. Thank you very much. That kind of brightens our day.
A pleasure as always.
Thank you.
Across Asia and the Pacific.
Thanks. So we worked our way through that.
Yes, I think it's best that I could shut up and hear you talk.
Yeah, we always get through it.
We do.
Yeah, I mean, that stat on the mobiles always throws people. It's that stat on the mobile. Mm.